Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Javier, a lot of moving parts in that main event. Paul Heyman observing, pulling strings from afar, talking to Roman Reigns. They weave that storyline into the show. They set up the Judgment Day against Sami and KO, but tied it together with the Night of Champions tag match, and also gave Imperium quite a bit to do tonight, not only with the Intercontinental Title Battle Royal, but also the involvement in the main event, costing Sami and KO the match, a non-title match, to be clear. What'd you think of that, what I just talked about?
Well, I wasn't too super thrilled with Imperium basically doing dirty work for Roman and coming up, you know, making whatever deal they made with Heyman, because you haven't established Imperium and you're pretty much setting up already. There's a clear pecking order. Roman's at the top, which while true, you have now a brand split, and you would want to hope to, you know, build Imperium into something bigger, particularly with the amount of time that they got in there. So not like a total deal breaker for me, but something that, like, you know, didn't really rub me the right way. And, you know, it was kind of obvious that they had to find a way to get out of the match because, you know, Judgment Day is being protected. I couldn't think of either of them. You know, Balor might have taken the loss, but I couldn't really think of either of them really taking the loss, and the other one was the tag team champion. So there, I knew there had to be shenanigans. The fact that, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn pretty much dug their graves in the match by, you know, starting another feud with Imperium while they're still in the middle of this feud with Judgment Day, kind of like, you know, like, okay, well, you know, I'm not really going to get into this match because we still have the Judgment shenanigans to go through, and then, like, you know, likely the Imperium shenanigans, which was, of course, all facilitated by, you know, Roman Reigns via Paul Heyman.
The thing that I like about Imperium being in the mix, and this is, tell me if you think this can coexist with what you said. I don't know that it can, but well, it sort of is they are in the top mix. They're out there with Paul Heyman. They're out there with Sami and KO. They're out there with Judgment Day, atop heel act on Raw. I don't think that makes them like subservient or anything like that. I think it means they're a top act, and that's a step up from losing from before Gunther arrived. Vinci and Kaiser losing last week in rather unceremonious fashion. And I also, and I don't think they are necessarily thinking this far ahead, but any interaction with Heyman and Gunther might give them a reason, or might be building a backstory for when Gunther eventually takes on Roman Reigns. And that could happen under many different circumstances. I don't even rule out that Heyman's next person he manages after Reigns turns babyface isn't necessarily or just Solo. I would not mind a Gunther Heyman pairing at some point, but that's sort of a sidebar and not really important to the larger story, which is Gunther versus Reigns at some point should happen. And we've got a long road to get there, but this is some early involvement, some seed planting that they can refer back to. But mostly, I guess I'm just largely happy that I want that group to get over, and they're in the top main event mix here on week one of Gunther's presence on Raw.
Well, yeah, that is the fact that the other two have been losing is primarily why. Because I'm taking it from the point of view of this is a new start for them because they're on Raw. They did a whole, you know, a lot of the previous week setting up, oh, Gunther's going to be here next week. Gunther's going to be next week. But we, you know, like in the new, you know, paradigm we're in, we haven't really seen them be really built up. Plus, we, you know, like I said, in the end, the little bit that we do have is Vinci and Kaiser kind of, you know, not really like exploding onto, you know, not being like protected basically. So that would be why I am a little bit hesitant to like completely, you know, sign off on it. You know, it is good that they're in the main event and tied into that, but again, it's like the specter of Roman is what I, you know, don't necessarily I think Gunther could you should be building Gunther. Granted, this is my opinion. I think you could be building Gunther to be like an equal to Roman. So at some point, you know, the two of them go up against each other, which is why I hesitate right now as to doing that. Because, we've seen in history where like two powerful factions, you know, would shake hands. And then, you know, go on to, you know, so that one faction can take care of the baby face that the other heel faction is dealing with. We've seen that. But the thing is, I don't think that in the new post-draft, ecosystem, you've really established Imperium altogether. I mean, they've done a good job pushing Gunther himself, but, you know, by you know, he's coming next week. He's coming. And, you know, he's got this reign also, you know, coming along. But it's the other guys I think is actually holding, you know, is pulling him down as opposed to, you know, raising him up is kind of where I see it right now. Not like a massive thing, but something to be cognizant of because, you know, things could get out of hand.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, if your idea is Gunther should be top guy, like a presented in every way presented as a top guy, seeming like he's just doing Heyman's dirty work, you know, that he's not for hire, you know, puts him in a different realm. I would say any association right now with Heyman and the bloodline, you know, comes with some basically, I was going to say all positives, but enough positives. I'll say this, enough positives to offset the negative that it seems like he's just, you know, willing to be a hired hand for Heyman. But I do see what you're saying. I mean, I get the point you're making, and I don't think that's, something that should be completely dismissed in terms of how it frames him at the beginning. I think he's strong enough. You know, I think he's going to present himself so well. I like the angle of him standing on the announce desk, you know, just kind of addressing the arena from there. That stood out as sort of a moment for him in a cool setting compared to just standing in the ring or on the stage. But I think it'll be fine. And I think this is mostly a positive sign to the fans that Gunther's a big deal. Not that there's that many people watching Raw who haven't watched SmackDown and don't know it.
Yeah, and as a counterpoint, also when Imperium first debuted on SmackDown, Ludwig Kaiser was protected for the first couple weeks he was there, and he was built like a monster. So to know that here's a guy who's really hard to beat, and then you are bringing in his boss, which is like several levels bigger, it gives you the impression that, oh my God, this guy's hard and this guy's a tough out. How much worse is his boss? And it feels like it doesn't have that this time because of the fact that they haven't protected. That's kind of why, you know.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. Well, let's pause and do an early introduction here, and then we'll get on to calls and emails. And we expect to have one or two on-site correspondents as the show progresses here. A lot more to talk about, including Becky Lynch, Cody Rhodes, the Seth Rollins sit-down interview, and more. Some real good talking points coming out of tonight's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 15th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch. Hope you're checking out my TV reports at pwtorch.com, our website. That's pwtorch.com. I cover Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday live, and then host post shows within about 5 minutes or so afterwards. And you can also find links in my TV reports to our live shows. So if you're listening on delay and downloading our show, which most of you do, and we thank you for that, if you want to join us live, just keep in mind, if you go to our website, pwtorch.com, you'll find a link at the top or bottom of the report, not only with a phone number and email to call in or email, but also the link to live stream the show. And that's if it fits your schedule to join us live and call and participate, consider yourself invited. The other voice you hear on the show so far is Javier Machado. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, both on the podcast side and the website written article side. Javier, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Always glad to be here. I'm assuming everyone else is too busy playing Zelda.
Okay.
Zelda, video game came out recently. So.
Okay, yeah.
I assume that might have gone over your head a little bit.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, you could have said they're watching the NBA, they're watching the NHL, they're watching they're watching the news. It would have meant, you know, all those things would be relevant to me. But I can't imagine somebody who would want to watch Raw playing a video game instead. But you know,
well,
everybody lives in their bubble.
My Twitter is nothing but people talking about Zelda right now. So
you know what? My Twitter says nothing about it. So it is very tailored to what we who we follow and what we do. I mean, I like Tetris. You know, but that, I mean, that's about all I have time for. I don't have anything against it. I just, as I've explained before. Anyway. Javier, good to have you on. I'm glad that you're here and not playing a video game that just came out. And as I said, we have a lot more to talk about. You'll have a busy week. You've got some busy assignments coming up a week from this weekend with two major events back-to-back here, WWE and AEW. So we look forward to your previews of those shows at pwtorch.com.
Yeah, and one of them is they're saying, 10 matches for one of them? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Fun times.
Are they all title matches?
Probably. I mean, they've got 10 titles, so why not?
I know, they could be. All right, cool. So give us a call if you are listening live right now and haven't called in. 347-215-8558 is the number. That is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. What was I going to say? I feel like there's one other thing I normally say, and I can't think of it. So let's just begin taking calls. And we'll begin with Joe in Albany, New York. Joe, you're up first today. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Awesome. Good talking to you, guys.
Of course.
I thought tonight was a good show. One of the better ones I've seen in a while. A lot of times I'll start Raw kind of like half hour after it starts so I can get a little fast forward in, but I didn't do that tonight. And I wasn't like bored or tired or, you know, found myself, when it was ending, not wanting it to end. Well, I mean, maybe not that far. It's still 3 hours. But I wasn't wishing it was over, you know, which is a lot of times how it goes with some of those filler segments. I really like what they do with JD McDonagh tonight. I thought that they, like, hit it. They kind of did it backwards in a way, you know, instead of doing the vignette first and then, you know, tease him for a few weeks and then he appears. Tonight, I he's in the Battle Royal, attacked Dolph Ziggler. Then you saw him again in that vignette, which I thought was really well done. And then, the backstage promo, which I thought was really good. So I felt like I got a really good introduction to him tonight. What did you guys think about that?
Man, does he have an intense stare. And seems, you know, he's got like, he very much conveyed he's got a chip on his shoulder. And he wanted to do things a certain way, and it didn't work out. So now he's doing things a different way, and look that he's arrived. What do you think, Javier, of how they presented him? With one critique being, before we got the vignette, we got him being, you know, unceremoniously eliminated from a battle royal, and I probably would not have had that be the first impression if you're going to dedicate vignette time to him. But I don't know that that's a big deal. But I wanted to note that before throwing to you.
Yeah, I had made that same note where all the NXT talent were in. That I'm like, do you really want to debut all these people in a essentially a throwaway, you know, kind of thing? He, I think, out of all of them, got probably the most because of, you know, he then picked a fight with Ziggler. That was my second, like, oh wow, we're going to get to see him deal with Ziggler. But I think the tease of him likely being the next person to join the Judgment Day, as we saw Balor. Looking at him while he was being interviewed on his way out. So Balor took some interest. That raised my interest. And also the video that they played was like my level of spooky, the kind of spooky I like, you know, with the, you know, like his dialogue and what he was. So I dug his intensity in that promo, and I'm interested to see, you know, they made me interested. They piqued my interest with him. So we'll see what they do with him.
Yeah, they absolutely did.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Wait. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Joe. No. Totally fine.
No, I was gonna say just, you know, when the beatdown happened, I feel like his back was turned to the camera. I'm like, who is that? You know, and I went from being like, who is that, to like, oh, that's JD McDonagh. I'm not really familiar. And then with each thing they did, I just felt like it introduced me better to a character than they usually do.
What do you think his character is after tonight?
I think he's kind of, I mean, based on what I saw, is he an NXT guy? Because I don't really watch NXT anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a caller.
From what it sounds like, he's a guy that is done waiting around for the opportunity and is ready to kind of like seize it, you know, that he knows he's a badass and he's ready to prove it. You know what I mean? In a sort of like menacing but not cheesy way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it.
Yeah, for sure. Javier, what do you think about him calling out and going after Dolph Ziggler first and saying, you know, well, he's a former, you know, he's held all these titles and I want to make an impression. I mean, you don't want to say that you want to work your way up from the bottom. Like, that's not a good way to sell the feud. So I'm not pitching for that. But, you know, and I'm sure the matches are going to be really good. And I'm not against, you know, seeing a McDonough Ziggler match. I like, that's going to be great, honestly. Two great athletes in there. But I don't know if, from a credibility standpoint, if JD should be framing it as like, I'm aiming for someone if I beat, it's a statement win, because I just think fans know better. I'd say I would have tried to frame that differently and better.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I was thinking, like, you know, I'm of two minds, because, yeah, Ziggler does have this, you know, history behind him, but that is so far in history right now. That, you know, that we're, you know, but yeah, I mean, I'm, it's better than nothing, I would say, but, you know, I just hope it's not long. I hope it's literally like one match and we're moving on to the next, to whatever he's going to do next.
I generally don't mind if we have multiple matches, but you know, it depends on how they are booked. If he goes even Steven and cheats to beat Ziggler, you know, you're defining him down out of the gate. But if he has a really good competitive match and wins, then, you know, but wins decisively, whether, you know, two or three. I mean, I think there's a way to come out of that. Because it's 2023. Part of getting over is I don't want to say it's meta, but it's winning over the fans by showing how good you are. And if you can go out there and just tear the house down with Ziggler, even if you don't, you know, and that's kind of the argument about Cameron Grimes. Like, should he be winning quickly, or should he be showing off how good he is in the ring and his key moves and his mannerisms and his bombastic personality? He didn't get a chance to do that against Baron Corbin. There's, you know, plenty of time for it, but starting off against Ziggler has a chance to be, it gives him the chance to show what he can do in the ring.
Yeah. But I think the only problem with Ziggler is that they kind of established that he's the guy that, you know, kind of the measuring stick. He's a good wrestler. So they have the guy start off with him, and then they beat him usually. And then we don't see him again until like the next guy that they want to put over, I guess, on like, you know, a lower middle card guy. You know what I mean? I think that I wish they would use Ziggler better, because he's been there a really long time. And he's really good in the ring, and he's not bad on the mic. But I think he's just one of those guys that they probably just—he serves a purpose, and so they use him to serve that purpose. So,
thing I'm going to go right well. I mean, that is definitely the case for. That is definitely the defense in the case.
Yeah.
For.
Yeah. Johnny Gargano. I'm a little. I don't know what you guys think, but I'm a little worried about Johnny Gargano, and I don't know why. Really, I am. I kind of do. He's. What do you guys think about Johnny Gargano? I just don't feel like he's doing it for me at all. And I know that they're trying to do the whole The Way thing again, which I did think was entertaining in NXT. I watched that. Funny enough, though, I thought Austin Theory, he was kind of my favorite in that. And I don't see them going that route where Austin Theory returns to The Way, but I don't know. I think that I remember when Gargano came back. I forgot where they were, but I remember it was a role where he just sort of, his music hit and he came out, and I feel like it wasn't in the U.S. I don't know, but I remember it being a moment, and then it's no longer a moment. So what do you guys think about him?
Javier.
Yeah, I think it's been unfortunate, you know, with injuries and stuff. It's kind of killed any momentum, and you know, any chance to build any kind of momentum on anything that he's going to do. And, you know, just seeing, like, what he's done so far, it feels like some of the angles he's been involved in have been stretched too far and got repetitive at points. You know, we heard about the Way thing, but they really didn't really hit it hard today. As, you know, as I was kind of expecting that might end up being like a big part of the show, you know, with them reuniting. But I mean, I the thing is, I don't know where they're going, because right now he just feels like another, like where Ziggler is, like a lower card guy to be a gatekeeper. That's kind of what he feels like. And if that's the way they want to use them, well, I guess that's the way they're going to use them and the rest of the way, I would assume, because Candice kind of feels like she's in the same way. I think they have more that they can do and more they can give. So, and maybe, you know, and I was expecting that putting the Way together would have been like a way to at least elevate them a little bit more, but we didn't see it really today. He was one of the last, you know, he was there when the crowd thinned. So that is a positive sign if you're looking for anything to be excited about with Gargano. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see where we, you know, what they did with him.
Yeah. I mean, I was a big Gargano fan in the takeover era of NXT, and I thought he was funny during the Way. I thought he was entertaining and his personality came out, but it just has not translated well on the main roster so far. And it's weird. Like, let's introduce you to these NXT wrestlers, but let's not introduce you to the Way. Let's just assume full knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been good to let the larger, much larger audience watching Raw in on what the alliance is with this, you know, motley crew, eclectic crew of people. And you know, I mean, you can do that over time, but, you know, I don't know. It seems like it'd be good to do it up front because, you know, I don't have faith they're going to do it. And that sort of means, yeah, they're going to be just, you know, a mid-card act, lingering around doing stuff. And I mean, Gargano's only 35. He's got, in 3 years, he can completely reinvent himself if he's got tread left on the tires with all the hard work he's put in his career and can still go. I mean, AJ's, you know, he can be rebuilt. AJ Styles is still able to go and has had a really good run. So I don't think anything that happens right now is definitive, but Gargano's in a different place than I think 4 years ago people would have imagined he'd be in when he finally, quote, made it to the main roster. He is not like the next Daniel Bryan, the next Sami Zayn at this point. And for people who have seen his best work, it's disappointing. But there's talent there. It's just, man, he has been unlikable. His just cloying, yeah, syrupy personality, it was not – I mean, no matter who he was up against, it was hard to root for him. So
he's really,
you know,
talented.
Done, but I'm not giving up yet. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really talented.
Totally.
But I think also one of the problems is that, like, when he's in the ring – and I'm not usually a guy that notices it or even cares about being smaller, but somehow he comes across like really small to me in the ring when he's like in the battle royal tonight, you know, like Rey Mysterio is small, but he doesn't really feel small to me, you know, cause it's Rey Mysterio. For whatever reason, Gargano like looks like tiny in the ring with the rest of them. But, I like him. So I hope he does well. And I had, one more thing. Cody, I think WWE is doing like a masterful job with Cody Rhodes. For all of the things that people say, you know, every week, and I mean, we got to give Cody, I guess, some credit too, because like I haven't seen him deliver a bad promo. I don't think, you know, I think that every time he comes out there with the suit and the smile and the, you know, I wanted to like not like it. Well, not really. To view it as cheesy, but he always brings me in. Just like when I think I'm about to lose, he's about to lose me. I feel like he always like brings it back, you know. And I just think he's doing a great job, and I think the build is great. Really funny. On Friday, I was watching wrestling with a buddy of mine who is not a wrestling fan, like not even as a kid. He didn't really watch. He knows what wrestling is, obviously, but I have kind of throughout the last few years got him into it somewhat, you know. But he's in and out, and he watched SmackDown with me on Friday after about 6 months. And they ran a package on Cody, and he's like, oh, so that's the dude. And I'm like, well, it's a good thing that that's coming across, you know, with all the talks of Roman and two titles and, you know what I mean, him not being in the title picture, for somebody who's like a non-watcher to recognize that. And that's testament also to WWE's packages. But I just that was kind of the last thing I wanted to say, is that I don't think they've really misstepped with Cody at all, despite what so many other the chatter, I guess, in the wrestling world can be. So that's all I had.
No, great point. So I'm glad you brought that up. I feel the same way about Cody. I you know, in AEW there was something there that worked really well, and then suddenly there was something when Cody was sort of unedited and didn't have sort of framework and guidance, where it got off the rails. And you can tell, and I wrote this in my report, PW Torch, he's about tonight's promo. He just keeps getting better. You know, he's smooth. He's likable. He's as, like, straight-laced as it gets, but he's also, and this comes from fighting through the injury like he did and bleeding and taking it from Brock, but then verbally just dishing it right back and not taking a step back and not conceding anything to Brock. He's like this straight-laced, old-school, but I'd argue also timeless, not necessarily for every era, but it's something that's going to come back around, a babyface who stands for something and does so unabashedly, unapologetically. And this character would not have worked in Paul Heyman's original ECW. Well, I mean, I guess in a way it might have, because Tommy Dreamer was sort of that character. He was, I'm thinking through the roster, and, oh, he wouldn't fit in with Sandman or Sabu or Shane Douglas. But wait a second, Tommy Dreamer was kind of like this. He was a badass who took a beating and never stepped back, wore his emotions on his sleeve, and was emotionally accessible to the fans. He didn't put up like this front of, I'm not going to be vulnerable, but he was also, you know, he also stood for something and was sort of more of the normal guy amidst this band of misfits, this roster of misfits. What were in Toy Story, what were the bad toys called? Misfits? Was it Misfits? Well, anyway. But yeah, it works here. Like, this is really working. And part of it is, it's not about being scripted, because I really think Cody's still Cody. I don't feel he's saying words that aren't his, but he's staying on track. He's not veering off. He's not, you know, improvising in a way where it takes away from the rhythm and the cadence, because he just can't help himself there. And he's doing so in a way that doesn't feel like he's resenting being told to stay on track. It just seems like there's a level of refinement and discipline and focus that wasn't there. And Cody can be the best version of Cody now. And it certainly helps to have crowds on his side. I mean, he's not getting what treatment. He made some reference tonight, and I was like, oh man, you know, that's risky, because it could get booed, and it wasn't. And then he also has, obviously, in Greensboro, his dad has such a history there. I don't know how many fans attending today are, you know, how aware they are of that history and how important that building is. But, you know, he can go places and reference history in a way that wins over crowds too. Things are going like really well for him, and I'm happy that they are, because this is the version of Cody that AEW had and then lost and couldn't get back. And he's got really solid footing right now in WWE with a fresh start. We just put up a 5 years ago flagship show earlier today on our Blue Brand. And one of the topics Jason Paul and I talked about is Cody showing in his post-WWE life that Vince McMahon underpushed him, underutilized him? And so, you know, I recommend people go check that out. That's part of what was previously the VIP exclusive after show that we put up on the archive. But it would be, I think, interesting to look back at what we were saying 5 years ago, even pre-AEW, about what Cody's, you know, what we thought Cody's future would be. Javier, over to you on that topic.
Yeah, I love watching Cody promos, because I'm actually like, is this the promo where he goes off track? So I'm listening very carefully.
Yes, totally.
To every single word he's saying. Every single phrase, his reactions, the reactions to the crowd. I am like Zapruder film watching it, you know, like so closely, because I'm waiting for the moment where like the crowd's like, hey, you know, this guy's a carny. and then I'm wondering like, and that's not to say that he's not going to still be popular. He's just going to be like one of the most over heels when that happens.
Yeah.
So But I'm like, I'm listening to him, and I'm like waiting for that moment, and like it wasn't there. I loved the way that he owned Brock Lesnar there in a way I don't think I've ever heard anybody cutting a promo on Brock Lesnar has.
Yeah.
He essentially said, I didn't just take Brock Lesnar's spot, you know, like, you know, I just walked in and it was mine. Just me being here was mine, and he's upset at that, you know, and like, and he delivered it in a way where, like, you believed it, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then, you know, and then to getting away with the, you know, he's like, what? He's upset that the way I won, that I won with a wrestling hold in a wrestling ring, you know.
Yeah, there was
in a wrestling match.
I mean, yeah. that's a really good argument if you're Cody. Like, I countered a wrestling move with a wrestling hold in a wrestling ring, and that's a cheap win. I love that. And then, yeah, that closing line, Javier, you're not the big thing anymore. You're just in my way.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing about Cody is he has a healthy ego. And I say unhealthy, not unhealthy, a healthy ego. And he says those things with a believability, with a certitude and a confidence that doesn't feel delusional. I mean, with Cody, it's he has to not seem like a sociopath. Like, he has to seem like he's not like this perfectly well-groomed suit-wearing guy who's just totally absorbed in himself, that he's relatable. And but it's a balance, and like there's all these things that can work in Cody's favor, but they can break in a negative way. And everything that he can do that can work in his favor or against him, he's just staying in the lines, and it's working for him. And it's really fun to see. He's going to be a great heel someday. And maybe his babyface run is so good that doesn't happen for a while or ever. But if they turn him heel, I mean, he'll be great at that too. But this is working right now, and you're absolutely right, Javier. I want to throw back to you to continue what you're saying. But what you're saying, no one's brought Brock like that. What struck me when you said that is I don't think Brock sold for anyone like he sold for Cody either. He looks flustered. He looks, you know, like thrown off by what Cody's bringing. So go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the another part of it, the way that Brock Lesnar reacted when he attacked him, and he's like
rattled.
He's like,
that's the
yeah,
word.
Yeah, yeah,
rattled, yeah,
yeah. That he's like, you know, was he yelling, "Look at my face, look at me," you know, and the way that he did that I mean, it's a thing. I mean, and I love Brock Lesnar's professionalism, you know, because I mean, I'm assuming he's gonna go over strong, and just like some little stuff that they brought up, you know, because I think he talked, because I think didn't he also mention about winning like in 20 seconds, you know, referring to, you know, the Cena thing, you know, I could go in there and have done it to, you know, and that I think that was something that was discussed also on some of these shows where it's like, oh, you know, he you know, because I think there was a caller a while ago that said that, oh, the match at Backlash, it might be a 20 second match one way or the other, and that was referenced, you know, as a reference to the Cena, you know, thing. Where he just demolished Cena, but like I just putting that in your mind and stuff like that I really thought that was an excellent you know framing of it, and that he belongs, and that he, you know, essentially said that, you know, Lesnar's time is over, and I'm going to be the one who all that equity that he's built up, I'm going to take it.
Joe, I appreciate the call. Good topics. Anything you want to add to that conversation?
No, other than I think in addition with the whole Brock and Cody thing, I think that it's real too. That's a good reason why Brock could be, because I mean, Brock hasn't offered a reason. So Cody laying it out there tonight and saying, like, essentially Brock is upset because he's no longer the shiny new toy, you know, I am.
Yep.
And it doesn't sit well with him. And I think that's understandable. That's easily digestible. That is a reason for there to be resentment. And so I think that's a good thing. And yeah, also go Miz. And then that's all I got.
Go Miz, huh? All right, cool.
Yeah.
I
think the Miz is doing great. So yeah, Miz is doing great. Good chatting with you guys. And yeah, look forward to listening to the rest of the show. Thanks.
Awesome. Call again soon. Miz,
Because the other thing it did, it also kind of reframed, because I was kind of, not as far as you were, Greg, I was kind of with you when he did that promo in the back saying that the title was mine to win.
Yeah.
That kind of, this promo kind of reframed that for me a little bit, where, because if he's this confident that he is the next guy, you know, that he's next, I feel much better about that promo saying, yeah, hey, it was mine to win. Because, you know, he's that confident that he would have been able to, you know, overcome everybody in the tournament. So it kind of reframed that a little bit for me, too.
That was a moment where, not self-driving, but, like, not autocorrect, whatever it is, a driver assist kicked in. Like, oh, you veered a little, Cody, but, you know, you're back on course. Like, there's a little bit of a nudge over the yellow line on the side of the road, or the white line, I should say, and he got back on track. In the sense that, yes, you can justify it, but it came across a little arrogant. And that's kind of in the promo is good otherwise. But that to me is where he has to just correct course a little bit and understand there's what he did tonight, and then there's a line like that. And that is the fine line. Like, to me, that line and the way he delivered it was on the wrong side of the line, and tonight was on the right side, and boom, there we are. That's it.
That's a great way to put it. That the line between arrogance and confidence.
Yeah.
What it did, because I was with you. I think I had the line a little bit further than you did. But what it did for me was that his line moved for me with this promo a little bit. That's why I'm saying that the last promo was kind of like recontextualized in my mind, as it's like, okay, so the line moves because he really is that confident.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Understood. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We'd love to hear your opinion, your thoughts, including if you, like Joe, are a fan of Miz and want to say go Miz. All right, let's go to Chris from Oklahoma next. Chris, you are a VIP member. We thank you for that. And you are up next. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Well, I actually liked Raw a whole lot. I'm just kind of shaking my head at the Battle Royal, because I'm just wondering, why would they water down the Intercontinental title so much to give Mustafa Ali a shot? That's really the only problem I had with it, because I'm like, it's automatically squashed unless by some miracle, by some chance, he ends up beating Gunther, which I don't see happening at all. But I was just wondering y'all's thoughts on that.
I'm glad you brought it up. It's a talking point for sure coming out of Raw. Mustafa Ali winning. I wasn't alone in thinking, did they just drop his obnoxious positivity gimmick and he's just going to be this, you know, spirited babyface? He wins a Battle Royal, does so resourcefully, fairly in the context of Battle Royal. He's celebrating, pyro's blasting. And then it's like, I know we got an email asking, you know, I haven't read the full email yet, but it's like, is Gunther a babyface sent mid-show? Because then Ali established himself as a heel. And now his first opponent, Javier, is Gunther's first opponent is a guy who seemed like a babyface briefly, which I wouldn't put it past WWE to do that. And then suddenly they affirm that nope, he's still obnoxious and annoying and he's a heel. And so Gunther's first pay-per-view opponent is an annoying heel who he can have a good match with and can bump for him. What's up with that? Because clearly Gunther was not a babyface based on what he did in the main event.
Well, I have Ali as a babyface, but a babyface in the veins of New Day. So, you know, that's what it is. the thing is that with the way I view Ali and his character based, you know, from like the whole development, is he's just putting on this act. This is like him like saying, the only way I can get on this show is by looking like acting like an idiot. So I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do this positivity thing.
Yeah.
And like, because I have a chip on my shoulder, because when he does confront Gunther, he does, you know, his demeanor changes for a moment. And he says, I'm going to go and I'm going to embarrass you and you're going to come back and then we're going to do this. And then that's when Gunther smiles, and then he puts that demeanor back on, and he says, see, you're being positive. But at that point, he wasn't doing it joking. He was doing it more like stabbing a knife and turning the thing. So I think this is just like a continual development. Part of the problem with the Rumble is because they want, I'm assuming they want Ali, you know, in the Saudi Arabia match. And it's going to be, you know, I'm hoping that we get 205 Ali against Gunther, because that's going to be amazing if they let him go, like, all out. And I think that's kind of the idea. And that could also reframe Ali, because if he puts in, you know, if they do give him that match coming back, I don't expect him to win, but him coming back, I think that would actually elevate him, you know, in the pecking order. So that's where I'm kind of seeing the whole thing playing off now. That's why I'm not so concerned about whether, you know, this character's a heelish or his character's heelish or not, because I think it's just like an act that he's putting on. Maybe maybe he'll start believing it at some point, but it was originally started as an act he was putting on.
Well, if somebody comes up to me and says, I used to be a loser like you, but then I started thinking more positively and now I'm a winner, and they reveal to me later on, oh, it's just an act, it was ironic and you missed it and went over your head, I don't know that I'm going to like be like, oh, well, then no problem. That is what he said to Otis and Chad Gable afterwards. But, you know, the idea that this is inspired by, you know, the way you laid it out, and that Ali, you know, the Ali character sort of met it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I'm not saying that he's like pure white meat babyface or anything.
Right.
I'm saying that you're the one that you're supposed to be cheering for him. He still has that edge, and that's why he goes after them. You know, he still has that edge. But you know, overall, you're cheering him over you know, Gunther, you know, kind of thing. So that's kind of where, you know, I see his character.
Very good, Chris. What else have you got for us?
The other thing is, I'm curious. Bray Wyatt, I was reading a report that he wasn't even listed on the rosters or anything, and I'm wondering, is he, in your eyes, is he like one of the biggest busts in WWE recent history, considering the injury time he's put up, the time he was gone, you know, the Fiend was over, but they nipped that in the bud? What's y'all's opinion?
I don't know all the details, but obviously he's going through stuff. I mean, you don't get reintroduced in a heavy push and then disappear and no one talks about you. So I'm hesitant to if he's a bust in the sense that he was on TV every week, but they realized he couldn't contribute in the way that they imagined and he was down on the card, I'd call him a bust. But I would say, let's just, you know, hold off until he decides to speak about what's been going on, or word gets out in some proper way about what's going on that led to his just sort of going, disappearing and nobody talking about him. But that said, as a preamble, I mean, he's gotten some big pushes. There's something very special there. And then, you know, he's been polarizing and inconsistent. Javier, you're a good person to have as a coach for that topic. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'm more disappointed, but not the way that your mom would be disappointed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm more disappointed in terms of like, we haven't really gotten something that could have been special for at least some people. Some people are just going to be turned off no matter what. But, you know, there was a lot of work went into it. It seemed like there was a lot of work going into the whole Wyatt Six thing. You had all those different, you know, people out there that had shown up at various times, you know, with the various masks and stuff, which harkened back to the Fiend era. You know, so yeah, I mean, we never got to see this, and I'm assuming you're talking about like the current iteration of, you know, with him and Uncle Howdy, that we never really got to see that established. And there were casualties along the way, because I'm pretty sure that his brother was going to be involved, and so was Alexa Bliss, and then Alexa Bliss has you know, completely vanished, because you know, whatever she was going to do revolved in that, like, also, you know, went away. So, you know, there were casualties to that too, so it wasn't just, you know, that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, hopefully things turn out for the best. So,
yeah, I think he's been a compelling character with inconsistent writing. Sometimes a lot of platitudes without payoffs. Other times maybe things worth reading into. Some things were read into that weren't worth reading into. But I always worried about when the bell rang. You know, how much hocus pocus did you need in order to get through the match? What kind of shape was he in? How dedicated was he to more than just the shtick? And I mean, like I said, it just seems like he's going through stuff, and there's still time, but I think there's, you know, going to be ongoing concerns you know, with his character. Chris, any response to that or anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
One quick thing. I was just wondering also, what did y'all think of the Seth Rollins interviews tonight? It's kind of a 60-minute style interview with Corey Graves. I thought they were really well done. Corey Graves, you know, does great as an interviewer like that. I think that it's interesting to see how they pull it off because there's like a big tease about what he talks mm-hmm. about Roman and championships, and I'm just curious what y'all think of that.
I liked him. I didn't think most of it was groundbreaking, but the line, the framing of why is this title important, and Seth answering that question and giving a credible answer that, you know, kind of threw Reigns under the bus a little bit. But in a way that also, you know, doesn't undercut Reigns being a big star who gets to kind of decide when he shows up and when he doesn't. But Seth says, you know, there's room for something else. And then I think the highlight was Seth saying something organic has happened where I used to steer my personality towards trying to win over fans. And this is more the fans have led me to this personality, to this incarnation of myself. And he said, and I think it's good to say whether it's true or not, that this is the truest representation of who I am. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I translated what he actually said there is for the first time since I've been in the WWE, I'm not fighting against what the crowd wants.
Yeah.
Is what I read. You know, so that.
Well, but people like shouting, you know, like people liked responding to his ring entrance before, but there was he's always had the dilemma of fighting like a babyface but talking like a heel. And so what's happened is now instead of talking like a heel, he's this over-the-top, grating, bombastic, eccentric personality that at first didn't feel anything like the Seth we knew in the Shield or NXT. But because the fans are so into it, and they're so into his music, and they're either accepting or embracing all the outfits and the mannerisms, he's like, the fans kind of steered me in this direction. And so I am now representing what the fans want me to be. And I don't think that's different than what you said, Javier, but it's a little more specific in terms of what is happening.
Yeah, I mean, tied to what's actually happening now, but I think it's also referencing the fact that when he came back from injury and the crowd was going nuts for him and wanted to cheer him, they immediately turned him heel, you know, and it always seemed that when he was a heel and he was started getting over the crowd, they just stubbornly kept him as a heel because that's where they wanted him at. And then, like, there were times where he was a babyface and the crowd turned against him. I mean, particularly that was the time where we were like, the infamous who's Seth frickin' Rollins thing. So,
yeah.
You know, so it really seems that during huge swaths of when he's been a babyface or a heel, the crowd was actually wanting him to be the opposite of what he was being portrayed at this time. And this time he was a heel, and instead of continuously fighting the, you know, cause you know, this, the Joker, I'm just calling him the Joker character, this Joker character that he's playing, you know, starts off as a heel, and the crowd turned him babyface, and instead of just, no, he's going to be the evil Joker, you know, they're turning him along with the crowd for the first time, and that's kind of what it feels like. You know, that's what that part of the promo felt like to me, was like him saying, hey, look, I'm no longer fighting the crowd when the crowd, you know, is going one way or the other. And, you know, and I don't think he's saying that because it's necessarily his fault. I'm not saying it's necessarily his fault. It's basically been the booking of him, you know, throughout time, that this time they're going with what the crowd wants. And this feels more organic, and people are, you know, this is basically the person he could have been throughout his career had they just let the crowd, you know, if they had gone with the crowd at the time.
Very good. Chris, anything else you want to bring up?
Nothing else. Thank you, guys, and keep it to good work.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Thanks for your VIP membership. All right. Now we're going to move to our on-site correspondent. This is exciting. It's been too long. Johnny Fairplay, welcome to the Week of the Frozen Po Show.
What's up, guys?
Listen to that. Not too much. How was the show? Welcome. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It was all, we had front row. It was incredible. It was so much fun. I took Jesse from the last season of Survivor and my good buddy Swank Daddy. The last time he went to a show, Stardust wrestled in a dark match, and he had nosebleed seats. So it meant so much to me to experience this with my two friends. It was a really,
nice to have friends
really
in high
special
places.
Night. Yeah. It's
nice, Johnny, to have friends in high places.
I'm doing well in life.
Awesome. So you enjoyed the show. But we had a call earlier say it was a like enjoyable episode of Raw. I kind of felt by the end of it like, oh, yeah, that didn't – I mean, like 10 years ago we were complaining about three-hour Raws, and they don't know how to fill the time, and I think they've gotten better at that. Even post-roster split when, you know, some of the top stars are peeled away, you know, you still got Heyman hanging out, lingering and doing his thing.
Yep.
You know, the Bloodline are there even when they're not. So, yeah. So you said it was – you not just had a good time, but you think it was a good episode of Raw, at least from a crowd perspective.
We loved – I mean, like, Dominic Mysterio is the greatest heat getter in 2023. It is so amazing, and I'm for it because back in time, Wade, I was at WrestleMania in Seattle. And I'm in an elevator, and it's me, Thunder D, the guy that did the Dead Grandma Lie on Survivor, Ray, and Dominic. And Dominic's 12 years old. And Ray points to Dominic and then points to me and goes, that's a real-life bad guy right there, pointing at me. And I'm just like, holy moly, how the tides have turned. it's really, really cool to see Dominic right now just thriving, and it's really awesome.
Yeah. The crowd heat for him, what do you compare it to? You've been going to wrestling for a long time. You know, how was it to be in a building with Dominic getting that reaction, and is it comparable to somebody who comes to mind?
It's some of the greatest heat I've ever heard in my entire life in the history of wrestling, ever.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
that great. I mean, like the Greensboro Coliseum, we were sold out tonight at the Greensboro Coliseum, and I do not remember – actually, I do remember. The last time the Greensboro Coliseum was sold out that I'm aware of was when I was there with Bruce Mitchell. It was Stone Cold versus The Undertaker, and Bruce said that was the loudest crowd he had ever heard in any venue ever in the history of concerts and wrestling.
Wow.
So that was the last time the Greensboro Coliseum was sold out.
You think Dominic is more over than Undertaker?
There's an idiot driving by.
That's okay. So you're saying Dominic is a bigger star and more over than Undertaker and Stone Cold?
No, I'm not saying that at all. But the last time that the Greensboro Coliseum was sold out, which was, I mean, what, 97, 96 for wrestling? So it's been that long. It sold out tonight, and Dominic Mysterio was the biggest heel by far, and the heel heat was palpable.
I just like reframing what you say in a way that's unfair, just to get you in trouble. But no, that's sure. That's amazing. They drew this huge crowd Friday in Knoxville, huge crowd tonight. I got the sense from the camera angles they used that they didn't have the tickets around the hard camera or the seats around the hard camera completely filled in because they didn't do the wide shot they did in Knoxville. But how like truly full was it?
Literally just a sliver behind the hard cam was the only thing blocked off.
Yeah.
Otherwise, every single ticket was available and sold.
Wow. Wow. Is that fun? I mean, that's
insanity.
Fun too, right?
Insanity. I mean like it has been for, I mean, I remember going to the Greensboro Coliseum. The first time WWF came to the Greensboro Coliseum, I went, it was the Macho King versus the Ultimate Warrior, I believe. I think there were 3,000 people there, if that.
Wow.
So, and I was also there for Starrcade 85.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yep. I've run the gamut.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Javier, jump in with a question for John.
Hey, Johnny, good talking to you again, man. Been a while.
I love you, Javier. I haven't interacted with you guys in a while just because my schedule's been insane. But I listen to you guys so much. Javier, I love you. Wade, you know I love you. And you guys are entertaining me week after week after week after week after week. Thank you.
Well, because of those very kind words, I won't say that you were suspended and not invited, and that's why it's been so long since you've been on. We'll just go with your schedule's really busy.
That. Yes, okay. I'll take whatever.
But no, you know what? Because you were so nice, I won't bring that up. I mean, I guess I did bring it up, but I won't say it's true. Anyway, Javier.
You could always edit it in post.
Yeah, it's Mark for edit. Mark for edit.
Todd, yeah. Pay attention.
The Battle Royale, when we basically only got to see on TV Ricochet's entrance and Bronson Reed, and then when they came back from commercial, Apollo Crews and Matt Riddle. The rest of the people, did they just file in, or did they actually get music and entrances? And how did people react? Any of the NXT call-ups or stuff that got any special reaction, or were just people just, you know, watching them file in?
For the record, I got Jesse from the last season of Survivor, one of the only villains in the last four seasons of Survivor, is here with me. We're on speaker collectively. So there was no one. Nobody got a pop, I feel like. Like, nobody got an entrance in that Battle Royale except for – who was
the first two.
Ricochet and who was the other one?
Bronson Reed, and then at the end it was –
Bronson Reed, yeah.
Bronson Reed.
Yeah.
Everybody else kind of came out.
Everyone
together.
Came in, no pop whatsoever, did not care.
Even Matt Riddle didn't get one.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, he got the bro, and then he did the he did the deal in front of Gunther.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because they were into the action. So you might call bias beyond this. Jesse, what would you say was your favorite match of the night?
Miz versus Shinsuke.
And would you say there's potential a reality bias?
Yes, the real world reality TV bias might be there.
Yes, but otherwise, I mean, it was just a fun night. So, yeah. Like, Cody was over like Rover, and
I don't even like Cody, but I like doing the whoa.
There you go. So,
I heard Cody song at an NHL playoff game, and I was like, wow, this is – I mean, I know NHL games are known to air hot wrestling themes, but I'm like, even Cody's theme? Like, I didn't think it was all that cool when I first heard it. And it's growing on it still feels
– I loathed it. I thought it was, like, yeah. From the same people that did, like, Jeff Jarrett's My World. Like, I thought it was bad.
You know, well, Johnny, I thought it's the song that's at the end of DDP's inspirational VHS tape.
Yeah. Well, potentially. You're talking about my good friend DDP.
I love DDP, but I'm saying it sounds like a song at the end of a self-help video.
Yeah, but I don't burn bridges here.
But it really has grown on me. And, like, when I heard it on the NHL game, I didn't go, oh, ho, and cool. I was like, you know what? This kind of fits. This kind of works. And I don't know, you know, I mean, stuff can grow on you that at first you kind of roll your eyes at, and there's something that's working. But elaborate more on what it was like to be in the presence of this version of Cody Rhodes, post-AEW, post-WrestleMania, injury and fighting Seth and proving himself to fans, and talk about how much he had the crowd in the palm of their hands, if there was any critique of what he did. Just, yeah, relay that.
Okay, so I'm at the Greensboro Coliseum. The house that Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair built. And everyone there knew that, and they felt that, and it was a beautiful thing. And when it was over, they Kevin Owens walked by us. I was like, hey, Kevin, can we get a quick selfie? He's like, nope. And he walked right past us. And then so he left, and then Matt Riddle made his way. And Matt Riddle and I, we do Hearts of Reality together along with Jesse. And we raise money for Give Kids the World Village that provides housing and everything for Make-A-Wish kids. And Matt Riddle is just like, holy fair play. And I'm just like, dude, what's up? Can we? And he's like, yeah. So I'm like, Jesse's going to be at the next one. He's like, hey. So he took a pic. And then Cody was behind him. And the guy was just like, you got 6 minutes tops. You got to get back. And Cody goes, no, I don't. And I thought that was pretty freaking cool that he was like, I do not have 6 minutes. He goes, I am going to be here for as long as I need to be here because these people need me here. And they did. Wow. And they wanted him, and there was a little kid. It was his first match ever, and he made this big poster, and it was so beautiful. And he held it up for Cody, and wanted to take a picture. And Cody said no. He goes, "Give me your phone. I'm doing a selfie with you with this picture." And then I got a picture of Cody doing that, and I gave it to Dad, and he was like, "This is the greatest thing I've ever been a part of." And I was just I'm almost bawling at this point because I was just like, I'm like, this is what it's all about. It was really freaking cool.
What he's trying to say is Cody is the biggest baby face of all time.
apparently. I mean, it was really, I mean, like, this guy gets it. I mean, like it's the little things, and he's doing the little, I mean, Todd said it last week on the Fix. Cody could potentially be one of the greatest heels of all time, and is probably better suited as a heel. However, he's over like Rover as a face, and let's ride this train until it's dead.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I said earlier in the show, I'm like, well, you know, Cody's going to make a great heel if he ever gets to needing to do that, because what he's doing
he
now
might
is
not.
Working and. Yeah, yeah, but he might. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, we've seen him be really over, and then the crowd turn on him by accident, not by design, and that could happen again. I mean, I'm not ruling it out, but he's on course. He's on track. You know, he's got driver assist going to keep him from swerving out of the lane of staying over and staying popular with fans, and he needs that because sometimes he can veer, but WWE is nudging him back into the right lane to be in as a babyface who doesn't get too self-indulgent and stray off track too much. And, you know, so, you know, and there is so much genuine, and there's so much that's genuine about him and likable about him and charismatic about him. And I do think people believe wrestling fans, I think, I don't even have to say a thing. I know wrestling fans want to think that the wrestlers they're cheering for are pro wrestling fans. They're not just in it for the money or for the fame. And Cody comes across that way. You go back to when he tried to redefine the Intercontinental title and brought back the old design. It's like, that's legit. And people know that he's authentic. So if you can focus on that stuff and stay away from the stuff that got him off track in AEW, he's going to make lots of money. I mean, it's crazy, but he's going to make what Steve Austin made. Like, per
even
year, the next couple of years, probably.
Even if they purposely say, Cody, you only have 6 minutes, like, even if that's a work, God bless him, because he got all that extra street cred by going, no, it's not 6 minutes. I am going to go around this entire ring, and every single person that comes up to me, they're getting a picture or they're getting an autograph if they want it. And that,
but if word
gets
out they do that in every town, if they do that in every town, then it's going to seem like an act. They got to be careful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
So Johnny and Jesse, compare them to the best. You said Dominic got more heat than anyone. Is it? I know Cody's super over. He's mega over. A lot of babyface are mega over. Sami Zayn earlier this year was mega over in Montreal. And this is, you know, we can go back, you know, John Cena's been super over, CM Punk, but you've been there for a lot of top babyfaces. Is this in the top sphere or is it the next to top sphere?
I think it's the top sphere.
There's no mixed reaction. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel like there's a mixed reaction. Like with Cena, there was a mixed reaction.
Yeah.
I feel like with Roman, there was a mixed reaction when they were pushing Roman to the top.
Yeah.
This is very pure. And as much as I sometimes I find Cody like a little bit too much. Like it's still like hard to not.
Yes, totally.
So I feel like this is. As pure baby face as you can get.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's very poetic, which is, I mean, like, that's what you ask for in a good, you know, drama or, you know, whatever, telenovela or, you know, whatever. And that's what wrestling is, a combination of all those things.
Yeah, yeah. sometimes it's right time, right place, and then just be disciplined and focused. And yeah. Anything happened before or after Raw of note that you can pass along?
All right. So we missed main event because we didn't care.
Yes.
What was the dark match? They had
it was
an impromptu deal. Like, you want to explain it, Jesse?
I forget. I think it was Matt Riddle ran it.
So Imperium comes in.
Yeah.
And then Judgment Day comes down, and so they're beating up Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And then Matt Riddle comes down, and they're still beating them up. And then Cody clears the ring.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Javier, anything else you want to ask about? They were waiting for the after deal to take place. And I think it was KO and Gunther. We're like talking. They're like, "When's this happening?" It's like, "Not soon enough." I mean, like they were having a fun casual conversation, waiting for the overrun.
Oh God, that's funny. That's funny.
Yeah.
Javier, jump in with any other questions for Johnny and Jesse.
Well, I was wondering the reaction that Ronda Rousey and Baszler got. You know, they got booed, but I'm curious if it's like, you know, legit, like, you know, boo, they're beating up one of our baby faces, or is it boo, like, oh my God, I don't want to see Ronda Rousey?
Sorry, one more time. The idiot that had to show up how big his penis was with his car rode by again. Same guy, because he needs to remind us. And the answer is small. Okay, I just wanted to. very tiny. Very tiny is the answer. All right, one more time. I apologize.
Yeah, when Ronda Rousey and Baszler came out, you know, the audience booed. Was it a, you know, legit, you know, oh, they're beating up one of our baby faces kind of reaction, or was it a, oh no, it's Ronda Rousey, we don't want to have to deal with it?
I barely even saw Ronda Rousey from where I was sitting.
Front row.
No, it was in great seats, right? But I saw Shayna Baszler more than I saw Ronda Rousey, and I didn't realize she was there until I looked up at the screen, so I was already booing Shayna Baszler. Just out of habit, I feel like. I don't know about you, Johnny, but I feel like I was booing out of habit.
Yeah. You're encouraged to boo, like, if you're fortunate enough to get complimentary seats, I feel you're supposed to go along with the program. So, you know, so we boo and cheer accordingly. Even though I was told by Sean Ross staff that I'm on the show, and apparently I'm about to do a run-in, so I don't know.
What were the dead parts of the show? Like, it didn't seem like they were acting a ton to Raquel. How did the Jinder Mahal's new team do? Yeah.
How's
the crowd
react
to end this year?
It was pretty cool because it was a beatdown, and we tried to get some chants started that failed, but it was not Raquel was definitely the low point. The tag debut I thought went over pretty good. So, I mean, it's as good as you could for, you know, having no idea who these people are.
did Miz give you guys any love, any attention?
Oh yeah, we got love from Miz. We got love from Xavier. We got love from Ricochet. We got love from Ricochet's girl, who's the ring announcer. I got bowed by her. Jesse did not. Ricochet will find me, it's really all. I mean, like, I peek behind the curtain. There's a new show this fall on E. It's a Sunday night replacement for The Kardashians. It's called House of Villains, and I'm on that show. And
fun.
Get ready. It is going to be one of the greatest shows you've ever seen, and I would watch every episode.
I was just going to say, it's time for plugs. Is there anything Jesse wants to plug?
Yeah, just
I got a beer with Johnny Fairplay that out locally in Durham, and that's about all I got to plug right now.
Yeah, we had a
Fairplay's got the plug.
Yeah, we had a viewing party in Durham last week, last week it was the Merge Sour. It is a lime coconut sour. It's me, Jesse, and Sandra on the label. And coming up this week, I'm going to be in Charlottesville, Virginia. I think there's 9 tickets remaining for that one. Go to SurvivorTix.com. That's SurvivorTix.com. It's me, the Queen, Sandra Diaz Twine, and Nina, her daughter, who's an Australian survivor. And then the following week, I'm going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina, for the finale, or as I like to say, the finale of Survivor this season. And we'll be at Lenny Boy Brewing in Charlotte. Go to SurvivorTix.com. That's SurvivorTix.com. But this has been an incredible run. I mean, I was in Chicago and New York, and this has been nuts. And I will I'm going to be at the Crockett Cup in Winston-Salem. I don't know what's up with that, but I'll be there. So there you go.
Cool. Do you have a podcast to plug?
My podcast is Reality After Show. Search that wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those. But links to everything available at johnnyfairplay.com. You have links to the podcast, links to the Patreon, links to the T-shirts, cameos, everything. johnnyfairplay.com. There's no H in Johnny. JonnyFairplay.com. And Wade, I missed you, brother. It's been too long. just feel free to just hit me up and chat. I mean, I'm available. I'm not available like on Wednesday nights from like 8 to whatever when I'm doing these viewing parties.
Well, that was nice. After your plug, I was going to say Mark for edit, but that now I would have felt bad again being so mean to you, and you're so nice. So yeah, let's chat off the show one of these days.
Absolutely. I'm available. Jesse loves you guys. I love you guys. Javier. Oh, mwah. Chef's kiss. You're the best. And speaking of chef's kiss, I got a show on Food Network coming up. I'm not allowed to talk about there yet. Jesse just sitting
Don't
here rolling his eyes, like punching walls. So, I love you guys. I love Jason Powell. I love the interaction. I love you guys just do an amazing job to what is the beautiful thing that I call professional wrestling. And thank you so much for everything you've done over the years. It's incredible. I love it. And keep it up.
Johnny, thanks. Oh, you bring the energy and the insight. I'm happy for your success, and we'll talk soon. Good to meet you, Jesse.
Yep, nice to meet you as well.
All right, cool. Thank you very much. Take care, guys. Have fun.
Bye, guys.
Have fun. Have fun. Enjoy your night. All right, Javier, what do you think?
I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to continue the show here with some calls and emails. We got Brad up next. Give us a call if you want to still join the conversation, 347-215-8558. Should I leave the – Johnny's not listening anymore. Should I leave the whole plug-in when Johnny did, or should I edit it, Javier?
Yeah, it's just impressive to me that you could do all that off the top of your head. I mean, you asked me, you got anything to plug? And I go blank.
Johnny's a self-promoter, but he also genuinely has a lot going on. You know what I mean? So –
No, but I mean, I admire that you're that focused and that driven to, it's a craft, and that's, I actually admire that, and it's, kissing cousins to wrestling,
Very much so.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So let's go next to Brad in Florida. Brad, thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey guys, did you Wade see Javier on camera? It's not Javier, Jesus. Did you see Johnny on camera? I know Javier wasn't on camera tonight. Shit.
I was wondering if I slipped into a parallel universe.
Brett, no, I didn't pay attention. But Johnny was sending me selfies, so I got to see him posing with Cody and other selfies throughout the show. So I got that dose, but I didn't notice during the show.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that Cody story he told was phenomenal with him, with the kid and the father. And he's right. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, that's pretty amazing that Cody does do those little things. And that's really cool. But my question, just getting back to, like, just the meat and potatoes of Raw, is on Imperium. My biggest issue with it, and I think Gunther's incredible, but my biggest issue with Imperium in general is what losers, you know, Ludwig and Giovanni are. I mean, I watch Giovanni a ton in NXT. Ludwig, not as much, to be honest with you, but Giovanni especially. And he had, he is so athletic. I don't think, you know, 90% of the fans even know this, but he's incredibly athletic. He was doing things when he was solo in NXT as Giovanni Vinci, when he was, you know, facing guys like Carmelo Hayes and this and that. He was doing things that were so different from what he does on the main roster. And my question for both of you is, do you think it's a problem that they are such losers, like that they do not win a match without, irrespective of Gunther? Because, you know, it would be like Judgment Day, like, you know, Priest winning, but Balor and Dominic and Rhea losing every single time. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's a weak point of Imperium, and I think it's time to start boosting them. And I want your guys' thoughts on it.
I thought that after last week's show. I mean, yeah, I think Vinci and Doc Kaiser should be protected more. I think they're really good, and I don't think there's any reason to treat them as anything but a top-tier tag team, other than they haven't been. So you have to decide, do we need to rebuild them? Are they damaged? But, I mean, they're good. And why would you want, like, Flair wasn't this big star, and then Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson were jobbers. So, you know, when you have a team linked with a top singles guy, protect the team. I mean, the Usos with Reigns. I mean, if the Usos were jobbing, it would hurt Reigns. So, I mean, it's not like they're like jobbers. You know, they're not treated. They're treated better than Otis and Gable, for instance, but I would like them to be protected even more. Javier?
Well, yeah, I mentioned that earlier today, that was kind of my issue with why, you know, with them teaming him up with Heyman. But, like, and it also, you know, cuts against, like, how they were introduced, where, you know, I mentioned that Ludwig Kaiser was introduced, you know, a strong character. But when he finally does lose, then Gunther would actually, you know, start chopping him and you know, torturing him for losing. I think the reason they kind of went away with that, because it's sort of what Roman Reigns started doing when Jay would lose. So I think that's why they moved away from that. But that kind of thing where, like, he expects perfection, you know, that's kind of the Imperium thing. It's supposed to be, they're supposed to be like the perfect wrestlers. But yeah, if your team is losing and you don't establish that, I mean, you could get away with it later after you've established it, but they never established it. They just went on from where they were. And I think that there's a lot more there with those two. With I never got to see Vinci. I saw him as Fabian Aichner. So I never got to see that the other run. But, you know, you have something with them where that I think that they could be a top guy. And in kind of in keeping with the spirit of that, like, I see all, you know, Indus Sheer coming in, and you have Viking Raiders, and you have what looks like a good tag team division, but I can't really get excited for it because they haven't shown us that they're going to do anything with the tag team division. But, you know, if they do, I think that they should be, like, your top guys.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Brad, what else?
No, yeah, it's honestly, it's just that, like, that topic, like, it really bothers me. Like, that there's such, like, yeah. I cannot remember the last time that Kaiser and Vinci won a match. And if the idea is that, okay, like, we're going to have potentially KO and Sammy, if they're able to hold on to these belts, start a feud with these two guys, like, that's not looking good. I mean, I can't remember a time they won a match. So, you know, it's just something has to change with that. And I don't think it's the characters. I don't think, you know, we need to get a new Imperium going or something. Certainly not. I just think they need to allow them to go a little bit. And tonight on Gunther also, I wanted your opinion is he's coming across as so respectful towards the sport and wrestling and you know, naming his championship, you know, the World Heavyweight Intercontinental Championship. And it's really feeling very prestigious on him, more so than the U.S. title. I think we all could agree on that just because of the way he's carrying himself. But I think with the respect that he's showing the sport and the title, he is coming across like babyface-ish. Like, I really do. And I don't know if that's the goal. Like, I wanted your guys' thoughts on that because he, to me, is, you know, he's obviously a gigantic part of Raw going forward. Like, have as much as SmackDown, in my opinion. And, you know, I wanted your thoughts on, like, is Gunther, like, kind of going babyface-ish with all this respect that he's showing? Because I think with Ali or whoever, he would say, whoever wins this will earn a shot at my championship and will earn my respect or something he said like that, which was, I was like, that's not really like a heel thing to say. But you know, then you have the dichotomy of Ludwig introducing him as you must show respect and rise and stand in place for our champion. So I wanted your thoughts on that as well with Gunther.
So, first of all, Imperium have won 3 of their last 20 matches, and the last time they won, this is the cagematch.net database, was March 11th, 2023, against Cruz and Del Toro. Before that, they beat Madcap Moss, Ricochet, and Strowman with Gunther with them back in February. But in terms of just regular tag matches, you have to go back to last year, I think, probably to find another. Oh no, they beat the OC back on January 14th. So, but yeah, I mean, they lose
big,
all.
Big
they,
win.
They,
big
they,
win.
They've lost 18. They lost 18 out of 20 matches. 18 out of the last 20, and I think 27 out of 30. So yeah, I mean,
Wade, not to interrupt, but it sounds like you're giving me the Miz's record. Like, you know, like that is, you know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's funny because when you're previous caller had mentioned how much he likes The Miz. I like The Miz a lot too. And I just looked up with house shows and everything. This guy hasn't won a match, I think, since December, even at a house show. I think the only match that he won was a disqualification against Seth Rollins on Raw back in February, which I saw. But I was just looking up time, and I want to hear your answer on Gunther.
Yeah, Javier, go ahead.
Yeah, I was looking it up too, so... I'm sorry. What was the question about Gunther? Because we went off track.
No, is he coming across like a babyface? I mean, is be with all his respect for the belt and respect for the ring and respect? Yeah.
With what they've just done, he's saying babyface things, but when they actually get to the nitty gritty of it, they have cheated, they have taken liberties, so that is what would put them on the heel side of the fence. But that's nothing that you can't clean up and then get them back, you know, into a baby face. So it's not like he is a heel with redeeming qualities. The question is, like, you know, how much you value those redeeming qualities. Me personally, I love them, you know, but I still would say that I would, you know, with if you have a properly built up baby face, I would want to see the baby face defeat him, like, you know, like a Dragunov, if he were to show up, that kind of character. I would want to see, you know, or Pete Dunne, I would, you know, as he is right now. I would see like to see them overcome like a Gunther character just because, you know. But like, if you don't have a strong baby face, then yeah, I'm gonna cheer for Gunther.
I think there's baby face potential. There's his tactics, there's an arrogance and aloofness that's heelish, but it can be flipped because what does he talk about? He talks about revering, having reverence for the wrestling ring. And I mean, I think wrestling fans are like, yeah, I like that. I like wrestling. I want someone who's got a that level of respect and isn't shy about it. So there's things you can work with both directions with him, but I mean, you know, stick with him being a heel for a while longer.
Last thing is on the J.D. McDonough thing when he was walking to the back. I'm sure you guys saw it when Kathy Kelly called him and interviewed him. Did you notice Finn Balor looking over the balcony as that interview ended? Okay, you did. Did you bring that up? I'm so sorry if you did.
I didn't. I just mentioned it briefly in my report, my written report at pwtorch.com, that I don't know if it was an accident and they didn't redo it, or if it's like this little Easter egg. Go ahead, Javier. What did you think of it?
Yeah, that's why earlier I said that it looks like JD Mundana is going to be joining the Judgment Day. And also because of the nature of that promo, that, he isn't where he's supposed to be because of others and not himself, which has kind of been their gimmick. Plus, his promo also kind of reminded me of, like, the stuff, you know, that Edge was saying when he first started the Judgment Day. So that's why, you know, seeing Finn Balor there didn't surprise me. Like, I could see that fit.
Yeah, that is really an incredible opportunity for someone like him. And not to say he doesn't deserve it, but just an incredible opportunity that, you know, anyone coming up from NXT would be very lucky to have. It's like, you know, getting thrust into being the right fielder on the Yankees, you know, opening day or something. It's just, if that's what becomes of this, he will be in a big spot. And the Yankees suck, by the way, Wade, just, and Javier, just pointing that out. But yeah, it's very interesting to see that. And I'm happy for him if he does get in that position. And otherwise, I thought it was a really good show. It moved along great, and it was awesome. And thanks for having me on, guys. I love hearing everything, and I'll continue listening.
Awesome. Thanks, Brad. Always good to hear from you. Appreciate it. Anything you want to add to that, Javier?
No, I just want to double agree with it was a good show, because I don't think we talked about that at the top of the show. I thought it was actually really good, and I think the first call I mentioned that it didn't really feel the 3 hours, because I mentioned, like, whenever I do one of these Raws with you, that the moment where I'm checking my watch to see how much we have left, I didn't really do that. I mean, it did feel like you could feel where the crossover hour was because of you know, how they paced the show. Like, you know, Cody got, you know, was you know, the what was it, the 10 to 11? No, wait a minute, that's the end of the show. That 11 is 1 minute. You know what I mean? it's getting late. So you know, outside of that, it didn't really feel like a long show. It was really good. I really liked it. And I was kind of worried because I'm like, okay, you know, we're what, 2 weeks away from so we're not going to have things, you know, popping. So I was a little bit worried. I'm like, man, what are we going to talk about? But you know, it's been it was a good show.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's bring Kyle from Baltimore on, get his take on things. Kyle, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
So I think I stick on my mind right now is the Becky promo about Trish. I really enjoyed it. This was, I think, this is the best sort for Becky because of, for a while anyway, she hasn't cut like a really good promo in a while, at least from this year anyway. So I enjoyed it, and now she made the challenge for Trish at Champions. That should be fun. And I think also what interests me too is that they're teasing even more heavily between Becky and Rhea, and they really need to – I don't know when this match is going to happen. It's going to happen either at Money in the Bank or at SummerSlam. I don't know, but whatever it's going to happen, it's going to happen really soon. So with that being said, I guess I think that's why I think maybe – I hear some people saying that maybe Trish will win the first match and they'll drag it out, but maybe Becky wins. And I also heard, too, in an interview earlier – either this morning or yesterday, that she said she just went Money in the Bank and all that stuff. But I don't know. I think that the end game is between Rhea and Becky. But what do you think about that and this mega tease that keep teasing between Rhea and Becky, and where is that going to lead potentially headed into the summer later on this year?
Yeah. We haven't talked about Becky's promo yet. Javier, address what Kyle had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the I really like the Becky promo. Pretty much, she showed not weakness, vulnerability. You know, and saying that, you know, she needed help, which is, you know, as they've established her, she's not, but she's, you know, so she talked about it. She's, you know, a lot of stuff going on, which is stuff that Trish had said previously, but in a, you know, to mock her with it. So, you know, like I mentioned, that it was something that she probably shared with Trish in confidence, and then Trish just betrayed it, which just makes, you know, Trish just like a horrible human being, which is what you want when she's a heel. But yeah, I liked how she delivered it. I liked everything she did there. I also really liked her giving credit to the audience, saying that I was blinded, and she said, you know, hell, you know, some of you probably saw it coming. you know, you probably saw it coming when I did, when I didn't, to give the credit audience, you know, to give the audience credit for the people who kind of like, you know, knew from the beginning that that there was going to be a screw job at some point, you know, kind of thing. So I really dug that. And I really liked Rhea Ripley scouting Becky, you know, and not really, and they didn't really hammer the point home. Just to, you know, the first little breadcrumb of what's coming up in the future, which, I mean, you have both Becky and Rhea Ripley on the same brand. They are the two top women. So you would expect them to, you know, meet at some point. And SummerSlam is a good time as any.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought, you know, Becky's saying I'm going through stuff. It sort of was alluding to, it's sort of weaved back and forth between is something going on she's going to share with us in, quote, real life, and then it veered into just kind of storyline, and, you know, she brought Lita and Trish in to help her. But I thought she covered all the bases. She had command of the story and the characters. It was, you know, sort of an expository speech, but in a way that didn't feel like it was belaboring any point or saying anything obvious. It just was sort of, here's what I've been through, here's where I stand, and here's where what I want to do from here. And it was good to...
Very absent of Bianca, I feel, too. Becky has a baby face compared to Bianca has a baby face. It's very different the way Becky delivered her promos and how Bianca delivered her promos, too. It's very... Bianca could learn a thing or two from Becky in terms of promos as a baby face. This is how you should do it. That's how she should do it as a baby face champion,
I hope someday Bianca just gets to be herself fully on TV and kind of sheds the you know, whatever framework that she thinks or she's told she has to portray as a character. You know, because as we've been talking about with Cody and with Becky, people see authenticity unchecked. And Bianca feels there's something she's doing that isn't fully who she would be if she was just being herself. And I think if she ever does that, she's going to be like more over than she is with a wider swath of the fan base. So, good stuff. What else, Kyle?
I guess I'll talk about the Seth Rollins sit down promo he did and talking about his time being with the Shield and all that stuff. It's really cool too to see back on that because the Shield exists, all that kind of stuff happened when I was 17. And then, well, I think I just turned 17 when the Shield. I just turned 16 when the Shield debuted, and so it's just really cool to see where he was then, where he is now in terms of being, I guess, number one or two compared to how you phrase it, the top guy on in the company, and it's compared to Cody Rhodes. I mean, but it's just cool to see where he was then, where he is now, and the fact that he hasn't held a championship in a while makes this 2019 is kind of ridiculous in my opinion. So hopefully he does win at Night of Champions against AJ Styles. And I keep hearing the argument with AJ to win the championship, and that's I guess a fair argument. But then I guess my question is, then you're just gonna put him back on Raw after you just drafted him to SmackDown? That's what that wouldn't make any sense to me. And then it's another opponent away from Roman Reigns, for a potential opponent for Roman. So I don't see AJ winning the championship. What do you think about that sit down promo with Rollins, and what do you think about that entire thing heading into his match at Night of Champions?
Javier, anything you want to say in response to Kyle, including the specifics about Seth? Anything else we haven't covered on that?
Yeah, I mean, I do have Seth most likely winning. I did make a argument for, you know, why it's a possibility that AJ Styles can win, you know, based on his prior history, one, you know, preferring Raw over SmackDown. You know, so I kind of made that argument. I also think that by we have to see next week, because they just teased that he's going to talk about Roman Reigns, you know, later on.
Yeah.
You know, so, but just the fact that they're kind of teasing that, making a big deal, from what I've seen from Triple H booking, he does, you know, start seeding things smaller and letting it grow. And the fact that they're really bringing it up, Roman Reigns yet again, and if they're going to like tease that's going to be a big part of what he's going to talk about next time, makes me think that it enhances my idea that maybe Styles does win. When I meant to check and I didn't check. When's Money in the Bank, Wed? Is it before SummerSlam?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that it's possible that he wins then Money in the Bank and then cashes in on Roman. Not doesn't cash in, but he actually challenges Roman for SummerSlam. So instead of being a surprise cash-in, he actually, you know, calls his match for SummerSlam. Because they've been doing way too much work right now with Seth talking about Roman Reigns. And Heyman also kind of like playing into that too by talking about, you know, oh, we have a clown who thinks he can do stuff. So it seems like there's a lot of smoke setting that up for it not to have a payoff relatively soon. And I don't think it's going to be WrestleMania. Yeah, so I don't think it's going to be Mania, and a SummerSlam is kind of like what really fits the bill the most. And in that case, I don't want Seth Rollins with the title, you know, because if he wins the title and wins the Money in the Bank, we're going to have like a, you know, let's merge the titles yet again. That'll defeat the whole thing.
I know. I'm thinking that as I watch this.
I mean, my inner chaotic demon kind of wants that to happen, but, you know.
All right, very good. Kyle, anything else about Raw tonight?
Yeah, I guess the other thing, too, that really was interesting for me is that I gotta bring up the taxi stuff again involving the men, but also with the women here, was having, you know, and you know, with Liz's injury, that came out of nowhere, didn't expect that, but now that Sheena and Ronda is now going forward to be the champions, I guess they'll have the same issue. I would think if they win the titles as well, I guess and also probably will be a good thing if Raquel is no longer a champion, she could go after Rhea Ripley as well. Give you another good opponent for Rhea will be Raquel and Liv as well as future challengers for the championship when they're back to being singles wrestlers, because they have history. She has history with both women, but involving the, you know, these with Ronda and Shayna, I guess if they ever do win the championships, that's the direction they'll go in. It's still in the same problem where there isn't the women's tag team division really isn't really that deep and that credible enough to make it be all that interesting. So what do you think if the direction is Ronda and Shayna to be champions, I guess my thing is then what?
Yeah. Javier, what do you think of that? And just kind of in general, I mean, Ronda Rousey was on Raw tonight. Like, there was a time where that'd be like Ronda Rousey. And now she's just another wrestler. Then making a really big deal out of every appearance she made. Huh? So both address what Kyle said, but also does it seem kind of weird that Ronda's not being treated all that different than, you know, everybody else?
Well, I mean, if this is her desired second career, then I think that it's, in a way it's better because she's been accepted into things, you know. You know, so in that respect, yes. I personally am super excited to see what they do with this, except for what Cal just said, which is then what when they win.
Exactly.
You know. Because, I mean, I think you get good stuff with them. Maybe Dakota and Io Sky turn babyface and then they feud. You know, you also have Alba Fire, the two witches. What were the names of them? Isla Dawn and Alba Fire. Wow, I remember that. I don't know where I pulled that knowledge from. But you know, so you have those two also. So they're, you know, but they haven't been established yet. So we're going to see how they get established. I mean, Sonya Deville
Does she have a debut yet?
Yeah. That's right. They haven't been introduced yet either. We'll see how that shakes up. So I mean, they've got pieces out. They just got to develop it. I'm gonna say this facetiously, so don't jump down my throat, Wade. I don't know if they have enough hours to really reestablish a women's tag team division and reestablish the tag team division. So. Yeah. You know, I'm not calling for more time, but you know, I kind of hope that they choose, you know, really fortify one of them and spend your time fortifying one of them, and then, you know, spend your time on the other. And because I think they have, like, good – there's a lot of good pieces now. You know, it's just, you know, can we get everything together and humming the – you know, to build this machine. So that's kind of what I'm saying. So I think there is potential, but there's a lot of work to do in both of those divisions, both tag team divisions.
That's like with Kaiser and Vinci. You just, like, lay the groundwork quietly for a while so that there's one or two teams that aren't buried, where you're not just shoving them into – a title match against Rousey and Baszler, who just seems so credible and tough, and suddenly it's like, well, you know, this doesn't feel like a threat. Like, build, just have an undercurrent where you're planning months ahead so that there's somebody credible that you can't wait to see take them on. And, I mean, that doesn't mean rebuild a whole deep division. It just means have your eye on one or two teams and protect them.
Yeah. So I mean, and like I said, a protracted feud between Io and Dakota would actually buy them time to start building up the next, you know, one or two to come up after them. But you better hope you hit on some of your picks.
Yeah. All right, Kyle. Any closing words from you?
The last I'll talk about is this Cody Rhodes, Brock Lesnar face off for next week, and have that. Yeah, and then. Is where as a match, it'll be intriguing. I think they need some relation. I was kind of, and we still have getting no explanation from Lesnar either. So that's also kind of dumb as well. He just attacked Rose for no reason, just because, as far as I'm concerned, that I can only guess here, is that he attacked Rose because he was in the main event of WrestleMania and Brock wanted that spot or something. I don't know. It just seems out of nowhere, and just for something for Cody to do, which I guess that's fine, but with no explanation, I guess it's like, who really cares, really, if we don't really give it. So I don't get the sense he's going to say why he attacked him next week. I'll be shocked if he does, but we think where that's going to go, but that's a dish call.
Thanks, Kyle. So, Javier, are we past the point where that's an issue? Because Cody's just said, hey, you know, Brock was threatened by the fact that I came in and became the man, and he isn't anymore, and that's enough? Or is this Cody speculating as a plausible placeholder until there is some reveal that makes sense and you go, oh, that was a plan all along?
Yeah, plausible. I'm going with a plausible placeholder unless they come up with a better idea. I think that's kind of what the idea is here. And I mean, when you're,
so you don't think they have a plan, but plausible placeholder.
I mean, they could,
like,
they could have a plan. They're just not, you know, it's a possibility. They already know what it is, but we won't know until, like, you know, things are obvious. Cause I mean, as much as I loathe the mystery box idea, posited by JJ Abrams in a TED talk, I think it was, the mystery box idea, meaning when you're writing like a sequential story like this, you introduce a mystery, and that's the mystery box. And then, you know, well, what's in the box? It's all about the mystery. And then, like, you know, until you have to open it, you don't have to decide. So right now, like, the reason why, well, I mean, we assume it's because of what he's saying, and it's plausible, you know, it's a plausible thing, in particular the way that nothing that Brock has done has acted against it. But if, like, later on, you'll see this in a lot in comic books, you know, if later on they say, hey, you know, we came up with this idea, like, you know, maybe like 3 months down the road, hey, we had this happen. What if, you know, it ended up being Rikishi who did it. that would be like a good example. Like, Rikishi, yeah. You know, who hit Stone Cold with the car? You know, the idea might have originally been, you know, do you remember who it was originally?
No, I was just trying to remember that. I haven't thought about that for a long time.
Yeah. So, and then at one time it was Rikishi, and then they said no, it was Triple H, and then it was like Rikishi for Triple H, and you know, and that bounced around. That's kind of like how you can do it. So you don't need to necessarily know who it is. It does help so that you could actually seed, you know, stuff to, so you could foreshadow events, and you're like, oh, I didn't see that, that kind of thing. But when you're writing sequentially like this, it's sometimes like a sacrifice you have to, you kind of end up, don't have to, but you end up making because of, you know, the nature of episodic storytelling with no real ending in sight, because, you know, it's going to go on forever. But yeah, so that's where I'm at right now, is that at least this is what they're going to go for, unless either they, you know, we're going to get a second part to it, or they're leaving it open for a second part down the line if they want to.
Yeah. All right, cool. Kyle, appreciate the call. I meant to ask Kyle, are you still there, by the way? You still there?
Yeah.
Are you excited that you got to follow Johnny Fairplay? Do you know who Johnny Fairplay is?
No.
Okay. Thanks, Kyle. Perfect. You can Google him if you want. I did that for Johnny because Johnny's still listening, and I want to see. Because either Kyle was going to be his biggest fan or he wasn't going to know who he was, and I didn't know. All right. Let's see here.
You also mean you could be like really hated because.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So.
Yes. I don't think he has any idea who he is. Yeah. All right. We'll wrap up here with a few emails. Let's see. Stephen Cleveland says, I've said so many times, Gunther needs to be the one to finally end the Tribal Chief's reign. If there's an opponent WWE that the WWE fan base will go more bananas for, I'm all ears. Sorry, Sammy, not you. Javier, we talk about that, but is that a thing? Like, does that make sense? Like, he should be the guy. Is he the right guy to end Roman's reign?
Not today. He has the potential to be there. I mean, he has totally like blown. I had heard of him in, you know, back when he was Walter in Europe, and like, you know, so I had heard of him, and then when I finally saw him, the stuff that he was doing exceeded my expectations. It exceeded my expectations. He exceeded my expectations. We're getting late. So I think you can get him there. How old is he though?
35.
Okay, no. So
Johnny Gargano's age. Yeah.
So he could be somebody that could be like the next guy. So yeah, I mean the potential's there, but he's not there yet. You're going to need to do some work, and rehabilitating the rest of Imperium would be a good start.
Yeah. Okay. Up next, Azan in St. Louis says, "Hey, Wade and Javier, do you see Dominic as a main event act soon? As soon as SummerSlam, maybe feuding with Seth." Okay, I'm a fan of Dominic. He's looking better in the ring. He is. If you do not want to ruin this by overpushing him and putting him in a world title match, almost under any circumstance, there's few circumstances, and SummerSlam isn't one of them, where I think fans would buy into it. Now, those are maybe famous last words, and maybe he's so over, you just got to strike while the iron's hot. Where are you, Javier, on the pace of things with him?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'll be honest. I was like really surprised by the match that he had today because it looked fine. Based where he was a year ago. He could hold his own. I mean, and you know, in the WWE, you don't need to be Kenny Omega to get over. You know what I mean? Yeah. The Miz does. I mean, Miz had a really decent match today. And he had a really good match against Seth Rollins. As long as you can hold your own and he's got that character, the problem is that character, I can see him challenge for the secondary top title. Like, I can see him challenge for the – not anytime soon, but at some point I could see him challenge for the world heavyweight title while you have a Roman Reigns as the top guy, but more likely would be like the Intercontinental US, you know, that level.
Let's at least get to the US or IC first, after post Gunther or post Austin Theory. Let's start there and see how things work.
Yeah,
I'm
extrapolating far into the future.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not like, you don't watch him and just be like, oh my God, why are you why are fans cheering a guy who's so awful? He's getting better. Okay. Number two, what do you think about the Indusheer act, and can they be something unique, or are they going to be a flash in the pan like before with Veer? Javier, what do you think? I mean, I actually like what I've seen of how they presented them here on Raw so far. I mean, I don't know. I'm not convinced, but so far so good would be my answer.
Well, that style of like team of those, you know, two big guys like that,
yeah.
They're not all, I very seldom like them. I think this is historically, it was like the type of people that would just get to be put together. Look at these two massive monsters. And they always disappointed. But it was Authors of Pain who changed my mind on that. Because I had the same feeling about them, and they were green like the first few times that we saw them, but eventually they got really good, and they had some of my favorite matches in the stuff that you know they were involved in. So I think that is possible for it is sheer to get that same thing. As I would have also said about War Raiders, War Machine. Oh my God, they're currently War Raiders, right?
Viking Raiders.
Okay. So Viking Raiders, you know, except they've been damaged by their, you know, previous booking. So this is a chance to do what they could have done with the Viking Raiders, except, you know, with a big team like that. But again, I mean, that was where I wrote in my notes, where it's just that they haven't shown that they're going to be really building the tag team division. And until I see them start working towards that, you know, I'm not going to trust in their tag team division, basically.
Yep. Finally, says Gunther, have what it takes to be the main focus of a show as a world champion in the future. There's a difference between being a guy who beats Roman, you know, a year, 2 years from now, and being the centerpiece of and the main focus of a show. Does Gunther have that?
Yeah, because I saw it in NXT UK. Granted, smaller show, but what he was doing there was not nothing that you couldn't extrapolate into a you know, bigger audience, because it was just him being a total badass surrounded by total badasses, and like he was a monster, and very similar with the Reigns thing. Is like, you know, who's going to beat Reigns? He's been champion for 1,000 days. You know, Gunther had a super long run as NXT UK champion. And it was like, who's going to be the one who finally topples him? So yeah, I mean, he has that experience. He's done that pretty much in almost any promotion. I'm pretty sure every single promotion he's been on. So, and like I said, the character that he plays can be, you know, like someone like Orange Cassidy, the bigger the audience, the harder it is to like get the entire audience to buy in because of the gimmick. This is just like a tough guy. So, and yeah, I think he has it. The possibility is there.
I think so too. You know, and every centerpiece act, main focus of a show doesn't have to be like the previous ones. You can build a show in a different way around a different type of character, and it keeps things fresh, and it avoids, you know, direct comparisons to others who you aren't exactly like. All right, I'm next. Oh,
and it's all in his case, it's all about the booking around him. Because I mean, there's some wrestlers
exactly.
that can actually, yeah, like they have a personality that's just like, no matter how you book them, they're going to get over. In his case, you do have to like make sure that the you have to set the table for him, and then he'll dominate.
All right, JB from Detroit says, Indusheer seemed to be presented as a very strong threat in the tag division tonight by what they were given and how they were framed by the announced team. That jobber was really good, by the way. He like looked. I mean, maybe he started to ham it up a little bit on the selling. He might be told to tone it down, but he took some good bumps, took a good beating, and looked like he was, you know, dying. So he did a good job putting him over. And his partner just got knocked out of the match early. The question JB has is, what is their ceiling on the main roster, and is Jinder a good choice? As their player coach, what are the pros and cons? So I think Jinder's fine. As he has the quote credibility of the bullet point on his roster being a world champion before, from a marketing standpoint, Corey Graves talks about all the people in India. And so, you know, this is it. Yes, it makes sense to have Jinder as a manager. And the downside is, is being bigger than them a problem? But Jinder was portrayed as a very big wrestler when he was being pushed. But Jinder has been groan-inducing. Like, people haven't been excited about Jinder matches ever. And he's been hanging around. And so to me, it's kind of like, are we going to enter an MVP stage where it's like, well, his wrestling days are behind him, but he can, you know, in a pinch, take a bump or two or that kind of thing. Or is he going to be part of the act? in the ring too and do some six-man matches or whatever. And I don't know of an injury that Jinder has at the moment that would keep him out of that. But so I guess I just have mixed feelings, and to me it remains to be seen. But Jinder playing off of two other people is better than Jinder cutting solo promos, I think. Javier.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the look that he had. He felt like these, you know, he's coming in and he's bringing in two killers with him. Speaking of Authors of Pain, who Paul Ellering vibes for some reason, you know, just with the look. And, you know, that's the vibe I got from him. And if he could just basically play that role and occasionally, you know, take a shot at them. And like you said, like MVP, where occasionally, like, they'll get him in the ring, you know, and, you know, because he knows how to wrestle, but, you know, that's no longer his job. I like that. I do hope that he, and the way that he, you know, just by listening to the words, obviously I don't speak Hindi, so I don't know what he was saying, but just the way that he delivered them, you know, more calmly and less, you know, cutting a wrestling promo of like, you know, being, you know, that kind of thing. And they just have him speak like a normal human being. You know, I think that could really work if they do it. But I mean, I just said a lot of ifs there. So
we should have wait and see.
Yeah. So, you know, so that's the thing. I think there is potential. So I am intrigued on where they're going, but particularly with this act, I might have a shorter particularly with Jinder Mahal, he's on a shorter leash with me, which by default means that Indushir is in a shorter leash with me too. But I'm willing to give them, you know, some room to surprise me.
Yeah. All right, very good. He also says there's been a lot of debate about the new world title and how it's been handled. What are a few other ways WWE could have gone besides the tournament, which culminates at Night of Champions, in your opinion? How would these options be an improvement? I mean, they could have had a more traditional, you know, with just brackets and draw it out, and then having the semifinals and finals at Night of Champions, but have more people in it, kind of make it more of a free-for-all. I'm still waiting for an explanation of why SmackDown wrestlers are fighting for a title that was created explicitly so Raw could have a title once Roman is drafted to SmackDown. But I don't hate this. I mean, I think it's fine. I think they want to have the champion win something that feels like he had to go through something to get the title. And I think it checks that box adequately, but really they just want to get to the person being champion and move forward from there. Javier.
Yeah. I mean, like if you were letting, you know, if you're asking me what I would like to have seen, do a G4 style round robin tournament where you have like your top guys and they have to wrestle everybody. And the one who has the top two have the final top scores wrestle for the championship. But you know, that will require long-term, you know, a lot long-term planning. And it just doesn't, I mean, the way that they ended up doing it, which was like, you know, two triple threats, the wrestlers wrestle on the same night. And then like, you already have your finals there. They don't like tournaments. And that's the thing, like as an avid fan, I do like tournaments because I like the matchups and guessing, you know, who's going to go here. I don't know like what your casual fan is into, and whether that ends up being a draw. And I mean, so I could understand that that's the reason why they shy away from, you know, tournaments like King of the Ring, you know, cause like, you know, I loved King of the Ring when you had like three matches in one night, you know,
right.
You know, but that made it hard to book to, you know, that made it hard to, you know, to draw people to buy your pay-per-view because you didn't know what the main event was.
Yeah.
You know, you knew it was gonna be one of these guys. So I understand both sides of it. And I understand that you're more likely to draw by only having like the finals or the semifinals and the finals on one night. You know, and they needed to draw for the Saudi show. So I understand them doing, you know, you basically do the tournament one day, then you start building one week, and then you have the face to face the following week, and then you have the show. You know, I get it. I just don't like it.
Yeah. All right, then he says, where might Brock Lesnar play into these alliances that are seemingly being built by Heyman with Judgment Day and Imperium? We never received a truly good reason as to why Lesnar attacked Cody at the Raw after Mania. So how much should we be spending our how much time should we spend trying to figure out what Heyman's up to, or is it just kind of surface level obvious? He's just trying to pull strings and weaken KO and Sammy and get in their head, and Reigns is instructing him to do so. Is there more to it than that, and where is it headed?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm pretty sure that that's the whole point of it, is hurt them as much as possible to set the table up for Roman to back clean up. That's pretty much what it feels like. I mean, and they pretty much straight up told you in the previous weeks when the first team up with Judgment Day. Now, Judgment Day does have their they're in the same brand. Well, technically, so is Imperium. So you're at the same time setting up Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn's next challenger, presumably, you know, if they retain the titles. You are also at the same time setting up their next challengers simultaneous to that. So we'll see, you know, and especially since Balor has now a pin on Sami Zayn, they have a claim for a title shot at some point if they make it through Reigns and Solo.
All right, cool. Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
The Apollo Crews was interesting because he was one of the four people who got intros during the Battle Royale, and also got that very punch out Rocky-esque montage. I'm interested in it. Although, like, I think they did such a bad job with him previously, where like when I hear him, I'm hearing him talking, I could hear the beginnings of the accent that he had to put on. Mm-hmm. So like I'm kind of, the fact that it's still in my head means that I'm still thinking of him and I won't say Babatunde, was that the
Apollo Crews and
General Aziz. General Aziz.
There you go. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. We had a whole thing about the pronunciation or spelling of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it was. I'm still going there. And I mean, granted, I might not have that had I followed him, whatever he was doing on NXT. But the fact that I was watching NXT, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people are not watching NXT, that stench is still there. But at least this was a decent shot, and I'm hoping for the best. Another one where like I'm willing to give him some leeway, he better do something. And I'm saying he, but you know, it also is the booking. He better do something like special fast.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Good. I'm glad you brought him up. I don't know. Yeah. He's got to do it's hard when someone just fans are jerked around with someone's character so much, and then, you know, hey, we're going to just hit reset with a video and not address the past. I just think sometimes people are like sort of get disinvested from caring too much at that point, because it just feels like the person's all over the place. He feels all over the place. But if you're going to do a hard reset with a vignette and, you know, just frame him, I mean, I'm glad they did it. I mean, I'm glad they're doing vignettes to introduce people, and, you know, hopefully we get some more of those for anybody else that they haven't fully established yet. I'm trying to think who's left from the call-ups, because they did JD, they did who are we missing who was called up that hasn't gotten kind of formally introduced yet?
We saw JD. I mean, there's Wagner, I think. But
oh, yeah, Von Wagner, yeah.
That's is he on Raw?
Yeah, he was in the Battle Royale.
Okay. There's him.
We'll see if they have plans for him or not soon enough. But if they don't do it, it just defines them down. So, like, in a way, if Apollo has any chance to be meaningful as a gatekeeper type, you know, sympathetic babyface or whatever, I mean, you almost have to do a vignette. Otherwise, it just feels like he's just a throw-in.
There was another one. I'm trying to remember. And I mean, they basically talked about him, that he's a flyer. I think it might have been, like, one of the last draft picks. There was one other person. I forgot who it was. That we also don't know anything about. That was in the Battle Royale, I believe. So I do have a question, because I haven't really thought this out yet. But does it hurt introducing so many new people at once?
Yes and no. For sure it does, to a degree. The question is, do you make up for it by establishing, there's this post-WrestleMania shakeup where fresh new things are happening, and it adds some relevance as opposed to a lull. It helps offset the lull and gives May a season of its own that people can look forward to. And maybe that makes up for sprinkling them in a little bit at a time, over time. I have mixed feelings on it. I mean, it sort of depends on how they handle it. It depends on how they execute it. But I'm okay with it. I think it'd be worse if the top, you know, seven people from NXT all at once. Like, you want to have breathing space for everybody. But I think there's room for Grayson Waller to stand out on SmackDown and you know, Apollo Crews and JD to be used how they're going to use them. I don't think they're getting crowded out, because when you do a roster split, but you hadn't really been doing the split, you know, hadn't been honoring the split before that, you just need bodies, and there's going to be room for them. There's breathing space for Zoe Stark, for instance, to get segments and be on TV because they have, you know, done more of a hard split of the roster other than whoever the floating champion, tag champs and women's champs are.
And speaking of Zoe Stark, we also got the segment with her and Candice, because Zoe started she got in with Nikki, and then Candice came in to save Nikki, which is kind of, because I don't remember what happened, because I remember Nikki had been stalking Candice, and I'm not sure, did that ever get resolved?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so, because, I mean... Because her coming in to save Nikki was kind of weird, but like, it could serve the way well if you have Nikki join them, because that could be because we were talking about how the way hasn't been really established on the main roster. You would have to basically have, you know, knowledge from the NXT stuff, but if you tie in a quirky character like Nikki into the way, you know the fact that the way would hang out with a character like Nikki. It tells, you know, it's like, oh, okay, so this is the kind of characters that the way are, and then that helps, frame the way in a specific way, the way that you want to frame them.
Javier, anything else?
No, that's about it, I think.
All right, cool. Well, we'll wrap up there. I appreciate our on-site correspondents, Johnny Fairplay and Jesse from Survivor fame. And thanks for our callers and our mailers. Javier, always great having you on.
Always good to join you, Wade.
Yes. Check us out on the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Podcast tomorrow. Jason Paul from ProWrestling.net for the flagship. And then we'll be by Wednesday night after Dynamite also. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Good night.